Reading is Psalm 100. Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. For the Lord is good, and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning, everybody. And thank you for that reading, Sue. So, I'm David. I'm one of the readers here. And today is another talk in our Solid Foundation series of sermons. And today we're thinking about life of worship. And we're taking as our text the Psalm 100, which Sue's just read to us. And this is a very neat, compact psalm. It's only 5 verses long, and it's intended for those coming up to Jerusalem to worship God in one of the times of the Jewish festivals. So it's addressed to a sort of crowd of people who are buzzing with anticipation, inviting them into the temple to worship God. So that's the kind of context of a psalm. But there are also a couple of things you need to know about this psalm that kind of get lost in the English translation, but are quite important to understand. So the first bit is the shout for joy at the beginning that starts the psalm and sort of sets the tone. Now, in the English translation, frankly, it's a bit pedestrian, to be honest. See, in the Hebrew and in the Latin translations, it's one word, jubilate, which you might have heard. That's the Latin translation. You might have heard that one. In English, celebrate and rejoice don't really capture the noisiness, right? And shouting doesn't really capture the joyous bit. We don't really have a word in English to capture this sort of, whoa, you know, jubilate. That's the kicking off point. This psalm is meant to be noisy, upbeat, joyous, exciting, okay? So that's the first thing. So that's kind of gets you in the mood of the psalm, right? So the second thing you need to know is that all the imperatives in the psalm, that is the commands, where the psalmist is telling you to do something, whether it's worship or praise or know or whatever, or come inside and join the crowd. All of those are plurals, okay? It's you, plural, come to worship God. You, plural, come to praise. This psalm is addressed to a crowd like you guys, right? It's not addressed to me as an individual, right? It's not a go into your room and shut your door and pray quietly kind of short psalm. It's for you to do it all together. And that's important, and it's lost in the English translation, but I'll come back to it why that is the case a bit later. So, having said all that, what's it got to teach us that's foundational to a life of worship? Well, it's shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. I said it was you, plural, but actually its scope is bigger still, okay? It's addressed not just to human beings, but to creatures, to plants, to mountains, to the sea. It's the whole earth. It's giving us the sense that the whole of creation responds to God in worship as it recognises God as creator. So the whole of earth responds jubilantly. This might be a short psalm, but it's not lacking ambition. So God created the reality that we are in. We belong to him, and it's created as good. And as such, the reaction is, whoa, that's amazing. So foundational to worship is a recognition of God as creator. Jubilation is just what nature does, what human beings do when they realize just who's created them and that they exist in God's presence. And so it goes on in verse 2. All the earth is told to worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him in joyful songs. Worship is foundational because that's what created beings do when they understand just who God is. So if a creature isn't responding in worship, there's something wrong with its understanding or its ability to respond. There's something not quite right. Which then brings us to verse 3. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us. We are his. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. So the focus has kind of narrowed down a bit here onto human beings who are told again, you plural, you need to know something. Now, I don't know you, but I've always found it a bit odd in this psalm. I was toying, when I was preparing for this sermon, I was toying with the idea of walking up in the middle of the music group singing brilliantly like they did and just going, nope, stop, stop, stop. You need to know that the Lord is God and he made us and we're his people and the sheep of his pasture. And you'd have thought, yeah, he's definitely lost it now. Why would you, in the middle of a psalm praising God, how fantastic it is, why does in the middle of the psalm, and it's literally in the middle of the psalm, it's the third verse, it couldn't be more middle if it wanted to be, why is it he's going, no, you need to know something. But we're praising God, you know, just, you know, why are you interrupting, you know? It's no accident in the middle of the verse. There's loads of stuff you could say about God at this point, about how amazing he is, but why know? Now, the thing to realise is that if you come across something in the Bible that's a bit odd, and you think, no, that's not right, doesn't make sense, it's almost certain that you're missing something, all right? Almost certain. And it's a kind of, I use it in my own mind when I'm reading the Bible. I think, well, that doesn't make sense. That's telling me, no, you need to stop, you need to think, right? So I think the explanation is something as follows. Okay. Now, in Jewish thinking, knowing something, like really knowing something properly, is not just about head knowledge, right? It's not just about your ability to regurgitate the facts. You see, in Jewish thinking, if there's a fact that you know in your head that ought to affect your behaviour, but you just carry on as normal, then the biblical writers would say, well, you don't actually know it then, do you? Really? You're just a fraud. Okay? So if you think that you should be doing something about climate change, and you don't, well, not quite all there, are you? Okay, so I was trying to think of ways of illustrating this. And I came up with something that we used to do in Rock Solid years ago. So David's going to come up and help illustrate this. Now, David, as you may know, is a teacher. So I'm just going to check that his knowledge is... That he knows things. So David, what's 1 and 1? 1 plus 1?
I think it's 2.
Excellent. So you've got that into your head. Good. He's got it into his head. That's good. That's very reassuring that a teacher knows that kind of thing. That's very reassuring. So let's see if we can internalise it, kind of make it more real for him. Okay. Now there was a game that we used to play in Rock Solid called Chubby Bunnies. Okay. Now the idea of this game is that you get a marshmallow and you put it in your mouth and then you have to say
chubby bunny.
Without the marshmallow either going that way or outwards, all right? Okay. And then you put another marshmallow in people's mouth and they have to get chubby bunnies and it gets very entertaining. So, Dave, let's try 2. 1 and 1 equals 2. I want to kind of get it into internalise 2 for you. Here we go. Now, I've got these marshmallows. And in case you're worried about the COVID safety of this, I have soaked them in sanitizer overnight and then dried them with Sarah's hairdryer. So they'll be absolutely fine. So Dave, would you like to take 2 chubby bunnies? 2 marshmallows, let's see. And Dave's got a very big mouth, so I'm hoping this. So can we do chubby bunnies, Dave? Here we go.
Chubby bunnies.
It's not done it properly.
Chubby bunny.
That's correct. Okay. So Dave, are you feeling 2 now? You're feeling you've got 2 in your head and internally?
Yeah. Work its way.
Yeah, okay. What about 2 plus 2?
I would say 4.
4. Have you ever internalised 4? You are
about.
Internalised 4.
Is it 2 additional 2?
Yeah, but let's 2 more. 2 more. 2 more. I've got a plastic bag if we need it. Okay, you ready?
Chubby bunnies.
Hey, thank you, Dave. Right, what about 6? No, that's all right. Thank you, Dave, for your help and helping to understand the Jewish idea of internalising knowledge. It's not just head knowledge. It's stuff we're supposed to know, you know, inside as well. Okay, so the psalmist is saying, know this in your heads, as a community. Again, it's plural. You guys need to know this. And the context is, look, if you know that you are the sheep made by him, well, of course you're going to come with joyful songs and gladness. Once it's really sunk in, the psalmist is asking us to think about, well, how deeply do I know this? Pause to get this clarity in your heads before you come in to worship God. Because if you know it in your heart, but not in your head, then you're just going to be at risk of being misled by something that isn't true later just because it feels better. But if you know it in your head, great, but it's not in your heart, then it's not really going to, you're not going to respond properly, are you? The implication of this is that worship isn't just emotional or just intellectual. It's with the heart, with the soul, with the mind and the strength. And that will be proper worship when you really know it in the Jewish understanding. Worship is a natural response to the thoughtful realization of who God is and what he's done. And so it's an entirely rational one. If we are his people, the flock he cares for, then worshiping him is an entirely rational and joyful thing to do. Some people lump worship with the irrational. Well, that's wrong in Jewish thinking. It's completely and absolutely wrong. And because it's wrong in Jewish thinking, it's wrong in Christian thinking. Of course, really knowing that we are the sheep of his pasture is foundational to many other areas of our lives. I mean, after all, if this is God's pasture, why are we wrecking it? If we are his, if everything I have is his and not mine in any absolute sense, that carries huge implications for how we live, how we use our property, our possessions. I mean, after all, it's a lot easier to be generous with something that's not yours, isn't it? And if everything is not ours, but it's God, it's much easier to be generous with it. I digress. So knowing this, of course we're going to enter his gates with praise. But before we do that, I thought I'd offer a reflection that follows from the observation I made earlier at the start, which is that this psalm is addressed to us plurally, not individually. The effusiveness of this psalm means one might consider that it's the psalm just for the extroverts, you know, the worship tiggers, you know. But it's not. It's addressed for the worship eors too. Not just to those who outwardly express inner joy with abandon, it's also addressed to those who prefer to worship quietly. And at present, some people might not feel they can worship. They might be in pain, or they might be grieving, or they might be depressed. See, note what the psalmist doesn't say. He doesn't say, all you depressed people, all you introverts, you can sit outside the gates, becoming more and more miserable and more FOMO'd. Doesn't say that. The invitation is everybody come into the gates. So, still come in. You're part of the community. However you feel about rejoicing just now, it's the community that comes with praise and joy and songs. It's not essential that every individual does so for this to work. You see, that's what's so radical about Jesus, wasn't it? That's exactly what he did. He welcomed people in all the time. It didn't matter whether you're a leper or a tax collector or a woman with a hemorrhage. It doesn't matter. You came in, you welcomed you in as part of it because he understood this psalm that worship is about a collective response to God. So a life of worship together means we can carry along those who aren't up to it just now, and then maybe later they can return us the favour. So don't feel guilty if you come to church not feeling like praising. There isn't a kind of praise standard you have to live up to. Other people's effusiveness in worship is not something you have to measure up to. We're all different. But you can take pleasure and be lifted up by other people's praise. And don't feel you've deprived God of something if you don't feel like worshipping. You haven't. God doesn't need your praise. So if you are an enthusiastic arm waver, that's great. But don't look down on people who aren't. And if you're an enthusiastic arms by side, don't look down on the arm wavers. We're all needed, okay? The worship of God is not meant to be monochrome. If God wanted it that way, it'd have made us all the same. You see, temperament is not foundational to worship, but doing it together, whatever our weird and wonderful ways of expressing it are, absolutely is. And that's the foundational point about the plurals in this psalm. Praising to God together, therefore, as a community is foundational. And that's why we've missed it in lockdown. That's why you guys are coming back again. Remember, we worship together with heart and mind and soul and strength, because we know in head and in heart that the Lord is good, that his love endures forever to all generations, even this one. So make that one of the foundations of your life.